Thank you so much. And to start with, we are living in shifting times. I won't use the word turbulent times, because the turbulence we are experiencing today is because of the shifting of the old world order towards a new world order. And when we look at Sri Aurobindo's dreams, we see how things are moving in that direction. And it fills all of us with hope, because when we see things are shifting in a certain way. So right now, it may look chaotic, but whenever the old order is changing and a new order is taking place, so this passage through chaos is inevitable. And those of us who are connected with Sri Aurobindo and the mother can relate it to the working of the new consciousness, the supramental consciousness which has been established upon earth. And it is called as the truth consciousness, meaning thereby that the old world order was built by the mind, ignorant mind, and therefore it was based on the ego, it was based on desire, it was based on ambition, it was based on lust and lust for power, and it was based on fear. Now the new world order will shift in a more dharma based order, meaning thereby it should be based not on the position one would occupy, not based on the money that one has or the military power that one has. These things are needed in the world as it stands today, but on the basis of the inner spiritual evolution and development. It will be based on sincerity, it will be based on commitment toward the larger dream that the earth has dreamed since its inception. So as we know, in Mother and Sri Aurobindo's vision, earth is a very special place, and it has been chosen for a grand experiment. And for this Chaturyog, Sri Aurobindo says that very beautifully in Yoga and its Objects, that for this Chaturyog, for each cycle of Yugas, God chooses a particular country to be the center of evolution. And then he says, for this cycle at least, it is India. And then he says very beautifully that there is a time when India has to undergo retraction, and yogis and sages, they go into the caves to engage in tapasya. By that tapasya, which is done largely for individual moksha during the phases of contraction, and yet they do a work of good for the world, because by their very presence they help engage mankind and turn his eyes towards the beyond, towards higher light, towards a higher truth. And during that time, as part of the God's Leela, there are different areas of the world which show a rise. And these areas of the world which rise up during that time are meant to take the bhoga of ignorance. That's how Sri Aurobindo says that when there is a contraction within India, sages and seers enter into the cave, they practice yoga for individual liberation. During that phase, mankind rises towards bhoga. It has to take the bhoga of ignorance as part of the leela of the divine. And this bhoga is important or needed before there can be a final release, a purification, a catharsis for the new age. So this period of bhoga we see is coming to an end. It had risen it to its climax, and now there is a shift taking place towards yoga. So mankind goes through bhoga, roga and yoga. So bhoga we saw, if we look at 100 years of mankind, even maybe a couple of centuries, mankind has gone through all kinds of comfort, luxury, it's still into that. But slowly the disease that it is leading us toward, that is becoming more and more evident. It is, all kinds of illnesses, physical illnesses, manifestations we can see, psychological illnesses, social maladies, problems at the international level, every level this is taking place. Because bhoga, before taking to yoga, it has to go through the phase of roga. Just like, I keep saying that before you go to the age of truth, you have to go through the age of justice. So Shani Maharaj comes before Ravi Var in Indian calendar. So it is the age when now the shift is taking place, and therefore yogis are rising again. They are stepping out of the caves. They are no more practicing yoga just for their individual liberation, but now they are engaging into the yoga for the good of the world. And very interestingly, Sri Aurobindo says that during this age, when the shift is taking place now, from the Kali Yuga to the new Satyuga, the golden age of truth, he says the yogis are born as kings and leaders of men. So they are not just now, you know, practicing solitary meditative yoga, but they are once again, like, you know, in days of old, we see Ajatashatru, we see Bhima and many others, Yudhishthir and many others, Shri Krishna himself, that they were yogis who were engaged in all kinds of dealings of the world, affairs of humanity. And now that is the age which is dawning upon mankind, and we can see more and more that there is this change which is taking place. Second thing which we notice, and that also the mother has said almost 70 years back, nearly 70 years back, 57, that the two things which are going to resist the new creation most, they are politics and finances. So yet without change of political scenario and the financial system, it will be very difficult to bring in the new world in all its fullness. Well, individual groups apart. So what is the change she is envisaging? She is changing, the change she is envisaging is towards more and more international cooperation. Right now we see its opposite. But this opposite is ultimately leading towards very beautifully, from a unipolar world, we are shifting towards a multipolar world where, you know, countries of which we didn't even hear about, Africa, for instance, they are coming together, rising in bloc, and all these things are happening. Regarding economic system, she spoke of a easy exchange of currency, not as it is today through one world currency and so on and so forth. So all these changes, just in a nutshell, we see that things are shifting right along the lines which Sri Aurobindo and the mother have foreseen. And so, though some people may be distraught, but basically this is a realignment and not a disintegration, that we must remember. Now, it's the five dreams have a relevance here. First of all, they are dreams. But whose dreams? The dreams of the Lord. That's how when mother was asked about Auroville, who is building Auroville? The mother said, Supreme Lord. So who has dreamed of, conceived of Auroville? She says it is the dream of the Supreme Lord. And then she says these dreams turned out to be greater realities than the present so-called realities of earth. So these dreams are dreams which have been sown in the heart of earth. These dreams are being sown in the mind of humanity. And these dreams are more and more going to reshape the future, because they are dreams which are going to press towards manifestation. That's how all creation begins. All authentic creation is through dreams. First, it takes in the form of a dream or an aspiration or a wish. Dream is in that larger context that a kind of hope seizes mankind, and then it begins to precipitate toward the outer, like any creative urge, that it first takes shape as a conception and then it precipitates towards earth. So dreams in that sense, it's not just dream the way we dream, but that means these are the hopes of tomorrow, these are the aspirations and wish of tomorrow, and this is going to seize more and more large masses of mankind. Of course, there will be always resistances, but we should not worry about that. So what are these five dreams? The first dream is, because India has to occupy a center stage, so it's important that India must be empowered. And an empowered India cannot be a divided India cannot be an empowered India. So India has to recover its own unity and strength. And by unity, Sri Aurobindo means not just an internal unity, but also external unity, meaning thereby it should once again regain. So India is an occult formation. The whole of India is not just the Indian territory as of now. And those who want to understand what this India Sri Aurobindo is referring to when he speaks of undivided India, or now we speak of Akhand Bharat, just go and refer to the map of the Mahabharata. So Shri Krishna had established the Bharatvarsh, And if you refer to the map of the Mahabharata times, you will see there very closely a shadow of the Akhand Bharat, that of which Sri Aurobindo and the mother speak of. So, though India got freedom, one of the dreams of Sri Aurobindo was the freedom of India, and yet India is free but not yet united, because it divided, as we know, not internally divided, which is also a problem, but divided even in its territorial integrity. Then second thing, in the same dream, he also says that the Hindu-Muslim problem, and he hopes and he is sure about it. At the end he says that by whatever means the division must go. He says that Hindu-Muslim problem, which has taken a very communal, rigid communal form, it should go, because it is needed to strengthen the nation. Otherwise, it will always impoverish and weaken the nation by one part within the country itself playing against the collective will. And the same applies with the parts that we have lost. And here we see again that the dream of an integrated India began with liberation of Bangladesh, where Sri Aurobindo's and the mother's force was behind it. And we see that, you know, portions of Pakistan, especially with the removal of Article 370, you know, portions of JNK got integrated. Now with problems taking place within Pakistan leading toward disintegration and separation of different parts, mother has foreseen this. So she has foreseen that, in fact, she says without a battle, Pakistan will split into five parts and all these parts will demand integration with India. So one of the dreams, which is to see a free and united India, so that is taking shape. Of course, the last ditch resistances are bound to be there. History tries to repeat itself. See, in 1905, when Sri Aurobindo actually entered into the revolutionary movement, the problem was the same. There was a division in Bengal along communal lines. We see again a glimpse of it coming up with in Bangladesh with the, you know, hardliners and Pakistan. But this is different from what happened that time. So this is like the snake's last ditch attempt to stall the process. But this cannot be. This won't be, because the mandate is against it. So we see the first dream of not only a free India, but a free and united India. And this is important for the good of the world. It's not about me being Indian and good for India. It's good for the world. And every power in the world that is opposing this union, by either strengthening Pakistan or, you know, preventing once again bringing the hardline elements in Bangladesh, is moving towards its own destruction. That's something which mother has said very clearly. In a message of 71, she says, men, countries, continents, the choice is imperative, truth or the abyss. So I hope the powers of the world do listen, because at least during the 60s and early 70s, the mother did say that right now she sees America siding with the adverse forces in arming Pakistan. She made a remark exactly like this. And then she says that, well, they must convert themselves. And she saw that America and Russia must come together along with India for the good of the world. Now, this is very fascinating, because we see on the other hand, at least one country is trying to completely oppose that plan. And in some way, one can see that one day India will become the bridge to bring these two countries together and together to create the a new world order. So this is what is happening at in the first dream. And we all embody that dream, and we all should, you know, live for that. This one of the work which is entrusted to all in mankind. How can we live that? Well, simplest thing is that in our thought and feelings, we must at least align ourselves to the dream. So this is one thing which we should be clear in our own heads and hearts. The second dream that he sees is the rise of Asia. Now, I used to wonder as to how this is going to take place. Till the recent events have actually led, actually we see Asia rising, despite all the obstacles. And if we really look at not just the China story, also the India story, that within 75 years, a nation which which got the freedom literally at midnight, in the sense that, well, it was the dense night with famine and everything looted, plundered. And within 75 years, if a nation reaches in terms of its GDP, economy and military strength, in terms of its cultural, gift to the world, it's nothing but grace. Whoever may take, wants to take credit can take, but basically it's the grace which is leading India. And we can see that other parts of Asia, which were till now submerged, now suddenly recent events have put the world in two blocks. One is the America and the West, and the other is Asia, Asiatic countries. But here again we see that the West itself is beginning to rethink its alliance. So we see that the world order is shifting, and if that happens, which I am sure it will happen, we will see, whether one likes it or not, the economic conditions, political conditions will be such that America also will be compelled to align. So all these countries are going to come together in a kind of a Vishwa Yagya. But first, Asia must rise. It is necessary. So we see this shift which is taking place very clearly, and new axis of powers. None of them is permanent because they are all shifting. But this very clearly aligned to the dream that Sri Aurobindo has seen. So this is the second dream. And the third dream he sees not just Asia but the unification of mankind. And here again we see that this is a new impulse which has seized mankind. That despite all the appearances, despite the fight, the war, despite the visa controls, the currency issues, still deep inside now, thanks to science and technology, which are but instruments, that mankind is beginning to be seized by the impulse of oneness and unity. This is so evident because by the very fact that now people are meeting each other. So at least like I can say from my so many travels to the West and other places, I can see that humanity is everywhere the same. Had I, remained only in one place, I would have probably felt, no, they are different, we are different. And yes, there would be differences, they are bound to be, and it's good, we can celebrate it. But in the deepest level, humanity has the same problem, the same aspirations, the same challenges, and deep within the same hope. So there is a, because of this intermixing of cultures, common sports and all these things, we see that there is the impulse of unification of mankind. And sooner or later, this is the last ditch attempt, I hope, for trying to create division. But sooner or later, we'll see that there will be currency and modalities that will bypass these mechanisms. So completely, because it will give rise to a new age where there would be direct transactions rather than going through the government process. This is going to happen. This is just a question of time. And all that is happening today will push the world in that direction. So there will be a larger impulse of unification of mankind, which is going to happen. So this is the third dream. And the fourth dream, of course, India's spiritual gift to the world. So that is very interesting. Of course, we see that spiritual gift of India started way back. And it's so gratifying in many ways when one travels to Europe, to America, that now there is even to, we can't imagine, even to the Middle East. I mean, the last thing one could have imagined was a Krishna or a Swaminarayan temple coming up in Abu Dhabi. And the Sikhs coming there, and they are having a literally an iftar party there and speaking of goodwill. This is nothing short of a, the whole world is shifting in a very strange way. Almost one can feel that Saudi Arabia is shifting towards a kind of Sanatan Dharma understanding of Islam, which is so palpable. So there is going to be India's gift to the world, and the world is waking up. Today if we ask people, their beliefs, whether in America or other places, we'll see that more and more their beliefs, their ideas are so much more aligned to the Sanatan Dharma way of understanding life. So they may not use the word. So we should not look for, they should talk about Hindu Rashtra and Hindu ki jai. No. They don't need to do it. But when you look at what they are doing, for example, one of the things which struck me is that they are speaking of Earth as a living entity, which was the Gaia concept, of course, given in 1970s, but long back. It's a very civilizational concept that Earth is a living entity. So whether it be due to pollution or everything, people understand that this is our home, a common home, and we have to treat her as someone living. So this idea of worship of the divine in matter, this idea of treating everything as if it's not, whether it be flowers, whether it be fruits, all this is going a more you know, conscious and sensitive dealing with the animals, which is something which I have seen in the last 30 years, which is something very beautiful. Even recently, we're still going on that. I was very fascinated when this Supreme Court passed passed an order that dogs have to be taken to dog shelter. Now imagine national TVs are discussing what is the human way to do it. Now imagine that dogs are there, they don't know that what kind of order has been passed, and human beings are literally discussing this is what a Superman would be, a very kind natured, benevolent, he's powerful, he can exterminate if he wants, but he won't do that. So how to deal with the dogs more humanly, what kind of shelter should we build, and these are coming on the national television, which is something so wonderful. So we see once again India's gift. Many people in the West nowadays, many people believe in rebirth, which is so fascinating. They believe that death is not the end. Near-death experiences. Who did the research? Dr. Raymond Moody. Past life regression. Today, an average person in the Western world, whether he believes in Christianity or not, you ask him, do you think that there is a past life or a rebirth? He will instinctively, almost most of them will say yes. Now, they will fit it into the Christian concept. I know of that also, which is fine. That doesn't matter. Because Sanatana Dharma is not about, you can follow any path, any scripture. But there are some fundamental doctrines. So people, this India's gift of knowledge and many other aspects, you know, which are beginning to take hold of the mankind. Many hardcore religious beliefs are being shattered because this is a spiritual age in which we are entering. So we see India's gift to the world is beginning, both through an interchange and through a mixing of people. Not just through, you know, Swamiji's going out and interest in Vedanta, interest in Indian thought and scriptures. All this is taking place. Very clearly, this dream is moving towards that. And then the last and final dream, which Sri Aurobindo in 47, because the supermind has not yet started manifesting, he says it's still a hope. And that hope, he says that, but this is going to happen. And that hope is that there would be, humanity will transcend the human step, the human formula, the human limits, and enter into a spiritual age. Now, this is again very interesting that nowadays, when I meet so many people, despite the hardcore people who hold on to the religion and say there is no difference, but there are a large number of people who don't know about Sri Aurobindo and the mother, but they are beginning to distinguish between spirituality and religion. They understand that religion has to do with externals, and spirituality is its core. It's not that two are completely divorced. Well, core of religion is always a spiritual impulse or a spiritual experience. And similarly, spirituality does has a religious side where we engage in physically in ways of connecting with the divine. But primarily a turn toward the spiritual sense, a turn toward the, again, spiritual sense is not just about meditation. But for example, people nowadays talk about true love. So why are they talking about it? I mean, earlier they used to be like, love was a word which was taboo. I mean, at least in India, you couldn't talk as a 16, 17 year old that, you know, I love someone. But nowadays, people talk not about loving someone, but what really is true love? What it means to be together? So there is a greater sense of love. Similarly, about knowledge. Now they understand the difference between book knowledge, a higher knowledge, and a knowledge which comes through direct experience. So there is now, world has opened up to the understanding of spiritual experiences. When I was doing psychiatry, almost, you know, 80s, 88. So during that time, to talk about spiritual experiences was regarded as, you know, those having it are mad people. So in fact, I was told that you can't do your thesis on this because they are all hallucinations. They have to be clubbed together. There were books written on these spiritual experiences, hallucination. Now the strange part is that the world is talking about it, and you know, people are listening, and so many places I hear, and people are writing on this, even in books. This is coming up as an acceptable thing. People are accepting that yes, people can have different experiences. And the strangest part is that it came in a very strange way. It didn't come through some people describing spiritual experiences. See how the divine works. So it came in 60s when there was a counterculture movement, the hippie movement, and there was these psychedelics. So, why did people go? Because, you know, a world built by a strict scientific materialism and rigid laws of nature, rationally governed world, so heart of man revolted. And it started looking for alternate experiences. So, in the process, many people started being labeled mad, crazy, etc. Now, look at what far-sightedness mother had when hippies started coming to Pondicherry. This is early 70s when mother was told about it, you know, their weird lifestyle, etc., etc. The mother said, it doesn't matter, they are barbarians of the new world. And she built Park Guest House basically for them. So it's a little distant away, and these people who are looking for ways and means, they can come there and they can live there in the larger atmosphere of the ashram. So it's very interesting how the old forms got broken and new forms are beginning to emerge in the field of education, in the field of psychology, in the field of health, and what we are having now. All this is sign of the new emergence. And Sri Aurobindo has foreseen, which is the fifth dream, that this new emergence, once it starts, the ball starts rolling, it is a spiritual evolution, but sooner or later it will lead to a spiritual revolution. Meaning thereby, as these individuals grow in number and groups, so more and more their presence will create a force field and a pressure which will have a cascading effect on humanity. So these are the five dreams. How we can help in the process, if at all, very much, because we are part of the world and Sri Aurobindo's yoga is not cut off from the world. Individual transformation, collective transformation, social transformation and world transformation are part of one continuum. The focus first and foremost should be on the individual transformation. So we are not like activists who just go around with a agenda saying there are the five dreams and everybody must, you know, work towards it. So first transformation is change of consciousness within. And this change is a big subject, but primarily it is through yoga. It comes as the human consciousness gets first enamored of the divine, in some way of the higher consciousness. Second, it begins to engage with the higher consciousness. Third, it comes in contact with the divine. Fourth, it opens to the divine. And fifth, it starts undergoing a change. So these are the ways, and in that process, the simplest method is aspiration and self-giving. So through aspiration, we come in contact with the divine, and by giving ourselves, we create space for the divine consciousness to fill us and transform us individually. So this is the individual part. It's a vast subject, but I'm just cutting it short. Then there is the collective transformation. Places like Auroville and, you know, Ashram, and there are such groups which are coming up all over the world. A force field must be created. Mother speaks in 57 in one of her talks. We must conquer space and conquer time. So space is conquered by creating these force fields, which are like hubs for the new creation. The new consciousness has to be received there, and then it has to be transmitted. It's like routing a nuclear station which would light up the homes through soul, you know, panels, transformers, through which the energy comes and then goes, electricity also, or the solar energy, there would be solar panels. So we all have to become collectively and individually solar panels to receive and transfer this energy, this power, this force, this consciousness into the world, become radiating channels and instruments. So collective groups are important, they play a role, and there would be many subgroups like Auroville, there would be other groups like Poonam, I suppose, believe. And I not just believe, what shall I say? I'm convinced it's one of the groups where, this is one of the hubs. But there are many, many such hubs in Auroville. Matra Mandir, of course, is the central hub. So each place should become a hub for the transforming power to act in that department. So what I mean is that, for example, if you have an electricity department or bicycle department or a building department, so these must be the places where the pioneers must automatically open to the new consciousness and discover new ways of manifesting the new force. So that's what she says, that we are not here to do what others are doing. We are here to do what others cannot do because they do not know that it can be done. So this is what our role is, to receive and manifest, not just for moksha or for some individual experiences, but in whatever field, like healing, like psychology, what could be a new way? So when we meditate upon it, reflect upon it, aspire for it, then we will get inspired. And more, first probably it will manifest ideatively and then it will manifest pragmatically. So this is the role of collective groups. And then of course it will expand at the national level and international level. So this is the way we have to approach. And for conquering space and for times, he says, by intensifying our aspiration, by gathering our energies and directing them towards this one single objective. So time can be shortened and conquered only by intensifying the concentration, by getting the focus right, by becoming one-pointed. It takes time in the beginning. Spiritual evolution is a side thing, one of those things that one pursues. But if one has even a little bit of sincerity, it will grow. So as it grows, after that, the whole scenario changes. It becomes the main, not just the preoccupation, but the occupation. So this is the way we can help in this whole process. This is the one. Thank you for putting up that quote, that we are here to do what others cannot do. So this is the task given to us. So this is the larger scenario in which the five dreams are there. And in this dream, we all have a role. So it's not just that the divine is going to put the dream and fulfill it. Yes, of course. But why he has left it as dream, this last bit? So why doesn't he just do it? So many of us feel, like for example, in the Auroville context, the other day somebody was speaking of utopia and utopia gone dry or this thing. So I just asked them, and I've mentioned this in another talk also, that look here, there is a phrase we all know, that Rome was not built in a day. And Roman civilizations was one of the most best organized civilization that ever existed at one point of time. As far as the organization goes, it was directly Mahasaraswati and Augustus Caesar, which is Shurbindo. He was the Vibhuti who received it. If you go back 400 years, then another 300 years down the line, in between, very interesting events that take place. There's a humanization of Europe through the crucifixion of Christ, paradoxically, by the same empire, which, because it had to ultimately give way to something else. So that's one story. But basically, it is this, that if Rome was not built in a day, do we believe Aura will be built in 70 years or 80 years? It takes 100 years, few hundred years. A civilization is built across centuries. And we should be very happy, rather than distraught, that we have been given this chance to be part of this work, which eventually will lead to a beautiful, luminous future. This is something so beautiful. So instead of being disheartened, wanting to walk into a utopia, we should work towards building, and not a utopia the way we want it, but the way Shrivinda and the mother, not just a utopia where everything is easy and comfortable, that's human idea of utopia, but a utopia where people are freed from ego and desire, where there is a spirit of mutual unity, harmony, and there is a life based on truth and not on falsehood. So this is the world towards which we are moving. These are the dreams we have inherited. People often speak about the legacy of Sri Aurobindo, and they speak about books, they speak about his work, they speak about his ashram. But the real legacy is these dreams that they have given us, and given us the great privilege and joy, because the more we try to live it and manifest it, the more we'll be ready to receive. There is nothing like a gate crashing or walking into the supramental world. If one comes, one will feel very confused, People suddenly come to Auroville, and if they have no clue, it can be a pretty confusing thing, that even the roads don't show up, sign up where you are going. When they come to ashram without having any idea, so they wonder, where is the meditation hall, where is the satsang going on, where is pravachan going on, because they associate with the old world idea. So slowly, when we start working toward this dream, as I said, through the individual yoga, individual sadhana, along the lines of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, we will see slowly that we become also simultaneously ready to receive first this dream and its manifestation within us, and to become transmitters, receiving and transmitting hubs of the new creation. So this is the overall overview and a quick summary. Thank you so much. Jai Ma.
Thank you, Alokta. Now we have the floor open for questions. I see Rajeshri, he's pioneered. He's the first one to open to the questions. Like Rajeshri, if anybody would like to ask a question, please raise your hand. And yes, Rajeshri, please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you, Alok ji, for that wonderful briefing about the narrative behind the dreams. There are two questions I want to ask. One is, if Sri Aurobindo was alive today, how he might measure the progress of India against those dreams? And second question is, how do we measure the spiritual progress of the country? Are there any concrete distinctive parameters through which we can measure the progress?
So first of all, let me start from there that if Sri Aurobindo was alive, well, he is very much alive, and I'm not saying on the basis of faith. I understand that part. So I am saying this on the basis of few things. One of them is, of course, the mother's series of experiences documented subsequent to Sri Aurobindo's physical withdrawal. It's a whole subject. I made a whole issue of All India Magazine on this, that how Sri Aurobindo is taking active interest in the affairs of the world. And, he was including the selection of the Pope, including the issues of Tibet, including about what's happening in the Western world. So he is very actively involved. And not only he is very much watching over the progress, he is shifting the nations. So very clearly he's like a dynamic power. That's what the mother said on 7 December 1950, that not only he has assured us that he'll be present not only as a consciousness that watches and shift, but as a dynamic presence. So what the changes we see today are very much part of that. The second part is not the second part of the question, but the first part of the question itself, that in 1990s, Asia the East, some of us may be aware, there's a beautiful book by Neerodha, Life of an Extraordinary Girl, and it is believed that Esha Di was Mrinalini Devi in her previous life. And she was blessed with the faculty of having a direct, not just a vision, but a dialogue with Sri Aurobindo. And this is something which Mother and Sri Aurobindo, she came here as a 9-year-old when Mother and Sri Aurobindo are physically present, and there is a whole story. But what I mean to say is they were authentic revelations. They were not just, many people have visions, but these were very authentic things. And she writes in the 1990s, one of the places that, well, she sees Sri Aurobindo along with Dilip Kumar Roy and a few others, Dilip Kumar Roy and Pavitra Da, and probably, I think, Champaklal Ji, and they are taking, with Sri Aurobindo, they are taking round of the world, a kind of world tour. So she asks, "What are you doing?" He says, "I am going to see, watch over the affairs of the world." And then she says, "Even these people," she said, "Yes," particularly her own uncle, Mama, Dilip Kumar Roy. She says, "Yes." She says, "What are you doing? What are you doing about India?" 90s, okay? Sri Aurobindo says, "Well, India, I have taken charge of India, and be rest assured that India is going to rise and take her right place." The mother said exactly the same word in 70. When Pradyot Da asked her, she said that, "Well, Sri Aurobindo, you be rest assured that Sri Aurobindo has taken charge of India." So, well, that's the second part. Third, almost prophetically, 1912, sorry, 2012. Of course, Sri Aurobindo made a prediction about it in 1910. But 2012, very in a prophetic vein, suddenly I was intuitively inspired to say a few things. That, well, as we enter into 2014, we are going to see massive shifts and upheavals and massive changes, both, good and bad, and ultimately, it'll all align itself toward the new creation. And see, 2014, which is why 2014? Because it's 100 years since Mother came to India. So what happened in 2014, I need not speak about it because it'll sound like a political speech, but it's not about political or A party or B party. That's how the divine planted at the right moment a person who was needed at that point of time. It doesn't matter. That person could have been of any party. So, but right person at the right time when one needed to steer India. So Sri Aurobindo is very much watching. And will he be satisfied? That's a big question because Sri Aurobindo is a perfect perfectionist. So we may be happy, but Sri Aurobindo would always say whenever Mother would This is 1960s, of course, after Sri Aurobindo's physical departure. She would prepare things and go to Sri Aurobindo, and he would say, world is not yet ready, not yet ready, not yet ready. So, and of course, in 71, she says that his presence is like a golden influx pressing upon the globe for it to become ready. So, well, not yet being ready is a way of saying that I am making it ready. And it's that's what it is, in the process of preparation. That's what Sri Aurobindo would say in all likelihood, that, well, it's not yet ready, but it's getting a little more closer to getting ready. So it's like, you know, when somebody puts in the baking oven something and one looks at it and says, well, it's in the process. So he would say it's in the process, but going in the direction it's meant to go. The resistances were foreseen, he would say, that we had foreseen politics, we have foreseen financial world, but we can also foresee the seeds of the new movements which we had foreseen come up, and they are going to gather momentum, and they are the ones which will ultimately govern the world. So things are going in the right direction, may not be at exactly the same pace as he would want, but that's okay. And about the second question, how do you measure the spiritual evolution of a world, of a people? It's by the wideness in their consciousness, by their alignment to truth. And you know, there are three things which have been told in our Vedas: Satyam, Ritam, Vrahatam. So Satyam is when they are more and more keen on truth than on success. They are not looking for an instant success, but they are people who are worshipping truth. They are seekers of truth. That is beginning, at least in, I travel so much all over the world, but I must say, within in India, that movement has started, and started in a big way, regardless of the resistances. We will not talk about it, because there are always resistances, and they also have their own place to play. So the more the truth goes, the greater the lie tends to, you know, come up. That's part of the plan. So there is Satyam, there is Ritam. Ritam is right place, right way to do everything. And if the word that should be used for Ritam is Dharma. So now we see that people are talking about, in at least in Indian context, that is it economics aligned to Dharma? Is, our politics aligned to Dharma? Is it Raj Dharma? What is the Dharma? So there is a kind of opening of the mind of, even outside, I must say, people are questioning, for example, the isolationist, the protectionist tendency of, a president in a country. And people are questioning, what does it mean? They are beginning to align that, no, this is not right. Intuitively, they feel that this is going to division. On the contrary, we should have a unity. So this is the way it will manifest. So Satyam, Ritam and Rahatam is vastness. So while on the one side we see a hyper-protectionist tendency, but the common man is opening towards vastness. Vastness of ideas, unity of the race. So these are the parameters. Another important aspect of spiritual growth is that religion and religious forms, they are going to go away. Because religion is like an outer shell. So, you know, we break the coconut in front of Ganpati, it basically break the shell and get the water. So when you break the shell of religion, which means external, over ritualism and all that, in which it gets trapped into formulas, then the spiritual emerges. That's what we see happening. Youngsters moving in, all kinds of clothes, which 40 years back would have been blasphemy. Equal rights of man and a woman, that both are, you know, ultimately they both belong to the divine. The soul is free of gender. All these things are very, very clearly in the light and direction of the spiritual consciousness. Children having the courage to speak truth, like, you know, Satyakam, Jabali and Nachiketa. So, these are the measures, and not about, you know, how many religious centers have come up, or how many followers of Hinduism and how many followers of Islam. That's going to become completely irrelevant. It's just a question of few years. That's going to become irrelevant. Because mankind is growing in a new direction towards largeness and vastness of spirit. So this is just in a nutshell. It's a vast subject. But very, very briefly, given the constraint of time, this would be Sri Aurobindo's outlook towards it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I think what we can do is we can take 2-3 questions together. That will save us some time. Karthik, maybe you can ask. After that, Aditya and Nitin, we'll take all 3 of your questions together.
Sure, yeah. Namaste, Alokna. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah. So I have two questions. One is so the fifth dream of Aurobindo, right? That is the evolution of, he says, the evolution of consciousness. So of entire humanity. So will that go through all the intermediary, like we have, oh, above the pure mind, we have higher mind and intuitive mind and all of that, right? So will it till the overmind and then supermind. So will it go through all of those levels, right? Will entire humanity go through all of those levels? So that is one question. And the second question that I have is, he also mentioned, I think Mother, in she mentions that the Asura has China has taken the form of the Asura, right? So, and she says that Russia, US, and India will come together. But now we see that the exact opposite is happening, right? So, how, yeah.
Yeah, so good questions. So first of all, with regard to whether humanity will pass through this, this was asked to the mother, and she said, why would it need to? Because now the supermind is directly acting. So, well, in a very compressed stage it may go through, like it won't go through the classical ascent first into the higher mind, stabilize. Because see, why we have to go through these steps is because the jump toward the higher consciousness cannot be by a single leap, because we will stumble. So we go to one layer and then we stabilize that consciousness in matter, then next layer. But now the consciousness has been established in matter, the supramental. So humanity will not need to go through all these evolutionary categories. It has to go through basically, maybe in a very nutshell, like for example, the next step will be something like an intuitive humanity. So this is an important step. So that's where we'll see the Superman. That will be the intermediate step, not the higher mental being. The higher mental being will not really, I think that phase is already over more or less, because higher mind is the hub where religions are formed. So it crystallizes the higher truths into formulas. So there will be an attempt. There are humanity which is trying to fix everything into formula, but this is not going to work long. But a more revelatory mind, inspired mind, that will start operating. It is already operating. But a clear-cut action of the intuitive mind will be the first main stepping or stopping point of the evolving consciousness. And then, of course, the global consciousness of the overmind and the supermind. So that's how. But it's all going to be not exactly as one stage into another. For example, while one is working, one may experience something of the higher mind, something of the intuitive, maybe a glimpse of the overmind and a touch of the supramental. That's how things are going to happen, depending on which part is ready for what. So it won't be exactly the way it is described earlier, and this has been answered by the mother. And then with regard to the alignment of the world, well, you see, regarding the Asura, see, she didn't say actually the China is an Asura. I know that has been slightly misquoted. She spoke of Chinese as being the lunar race. And in fact, she spoke of the Mongols. So that includes not just Chinese, but some other. And if you see the lunar features, she was basically referring to a very well-known ancient theory about China, that they came from the moon, extremely restless. Shrivindra has also remarked that. At the same time, she made very interesting remarks. So one was that because they have come from outside, the psychic thing is not developed. But there is an, in fact, she has used the word that they don't have a psychic being. But then she says, because of their presence and contamination with earth, it's quite likely they have acquired. So this is one part, which would be a good news. The second part is that she also agreed that as far as the intellect is concerned, higher intellect, they have a very developed, sharp, precise intellect. So that's an advantage. And that's what, actually, from there, probably people deduce about being Asura. They're not Asura in that sense. In fact, Asuras were, during her time, were both in Russia and Germany and Italy. So there was no Chinese Asura at that point of time. But even if it were, see, the fascinating part is the Asura can come together for the divine work. And let me give the classic example. Ghatotkach is half a Rakshasa. And yet look at the man that at a crucial moment, he is the one who comes and assists in the battle. In fact, sacrifices himself. So when the divine moves nations, you know, there is a little writing on marbles of time, you know, moving on the chessboard of life. When divine moves nations, there is nothing which can which cannot change. So yes, I agree that one should be cautious in dealing with China. But this question used to always come to me, and Shobindo, by the way, has appreciated ancient Chinese civilization. So has the mother. She has spoken about Wu Wei, the ancient Chinese way. And she has spoken also about the liberation of Tibet. But she spoke about it a few centuries because Tibet has to accept the spiritualization. So things are shifting. And while if Asia has to rise, can it rise not keeping China into consideration? And for all we know, coming together of China and India may give us also just a good breathing time to ensure Pakistan's dissolution and to counter the, you know, America's, present America's certain policies. And who knows, with that contact and contamination of China, India and Russia consciousness, maybe something, it will also undergo a change. That's how I look at it. So nothing is fixed in the world. That's why it is Jagatyam Jagat. Everything is shifting. And now this shifting is taking place not under the mind, but the supermind. So we should always be full of hope. That's how I look at it. Yeah. Yeah. So the, what was the question? The previous question on Vedic heritage, there was a question I saw flashing.
Yeah, I can read out perhaps both the questions. You can take two questions together. The first one is by Aditya. He says, Sri Aurobindo's work mainly revolves around the Vedic tradition as per my limited understanding. When we talk of India's spiritual gift, what place does the parallel and equally old shaman tradition, which includes Buddha's teaching and Jainism, hold in this context? Historically, these traditions have clashed too. If we say that only the common grounds of the two are the actual core fruit of the Indian spirituality, would that be right?
Well, Sri Aurobindo answered that in one of his aphorisms. So basically what happens, again, for example, with regard to Buddha and the Vedic tradition, there was a battle during that time. But over a period of time, we know that Buddha was very much accepted as part of the Vedic culture because, you know, it was accepted as part of the Agam tradition. That's how India integrated, because what Buddha was saying is something what Vedanta says, except that instead of saying the one, he said none. So basically it was his way of saying that there is nothing which can define, there is no way you can speak about it. And so he gave these Anatmavad, which is an extreme, you know, if you take the one idea of the one, from the being you go, where has the being come from? We go to non-being. So it is there in the Vedic tradition. So people began to understand that, and now Buddha is very much part of the tradition. Jainism, though it is again because of the Gnostic element apparently, but it has many things which it has taken in. Even Buddhism, Mahayana Buddhism is so much like the Hindu and, you know, Tantra together. And Jainism, which is, you know, insistent on perfection of the inner state. So there are very interesting common elements. I know of many Jains who have turned towards Sri Aurobindo and the mother, Buddhist also. So what we have to do is basically, see, in a tradition there are externalities. If you focus on externalities, you will be divided, because it's like when you look at the man's physical features, you become racist. But when you go to the core, you become a unifying factor. So in every religion, one has to bring out the core aspects, and the core aspect is spiritual, which includes even Islam for that matter. So if the core aspect comes out, then there would be unity, and it is part of our task, all of us, that to bring out the core rather than emphasize on the externals. So yes, shamanism, not only shamanism, Chaldean is so much like Vedic. Mother spoke about it, so I wanted to know more about Chaldea. You just feel that it is the Vedic rishis, but just they are speaking almost the same language. Para and apara and two spheres of consciousness. By aspiration, you can go to the higher consciousness. Everything is Vedic. So, yes, they have lost their ground, but it is there in the collective memory of the race. That is how the awakening is coming. Even the Vedic tradition will not be in the classical form. that people should do yajna and homa. I mean, again, those who want to do can do. But the inner meaning of yajna, inner meaning of, you know, sacrifice, which we see in the Gita, Sri Krishna himself reveals, not just the Vedavad, but the truth of the Vedas, that is going to come up. Veda as the secret knowledge embedded in creation. When a scientist tries to discover what is it, that secret truth which underlies material world, he is basically being Vedic. See, that's how the Vedic traditions discovered the atomic structure. How did they do it? Because Veda is everywhere. Sri Aurobindo says, spiritual thought is crammed in matter's forms. So they will not use the word. The generation which are going to come, they are not going to use classical word, classical Sanskrit. They are not going to recite the, Kain Upanishad. And yet, for example, Kain Upanishad, since I mentioned. So several times in medical conferences, I have used the word top-down view. And they have taken it so well. Including in New York, in one of the lectures. So then they said, this is something so novel. Then I said, now I'm going to tell a secret. It is there in Sri Krishna's Gita in the form of Ashwat tree. And it's there in Kain Upanishad, Yan Man Sana Manute Yana Aur Manomata. So then they just wonder. So you don't have to use the terms, but you have to understand that there is a greater consciousness. And, you know, like, as I said, when Darwin very interestingly wrote about the descent of man. So it's very interesting. And so now we can speak about the descent of Superman. So they will not use the language. We should not be worried about terminology and externalities. But inwardly, yes, it will be more and more aligned to these profound truths. Yeah. I mean, there are many things in it, but I'm just cutting it just short.
Thank you, Alokta. If we can take a couple of more questions, will that be all right?
Yeah, fine. In fact, I saw a couple of them flash by. You can simultaneously put it on the screen, so it'll become easy. Yeah.
So Nitin's question is, thank you, Alokta. Guidance on how corporates can best align for these dreams, and what would be the most relevant metric for the corporates to evolve? Second, guidance on relevance of the mind, health and work as we transition from bhoga to roga and then to yoga.
Yeah. So, regarding the corporate, see, the path is very clear. But will the corporates be ready to do it? So, basically, corporate culture was centered around money. And then, you know, models came, capitalism and communism, etc. But basically, it should be in the spirit of yajna. So, the corporate world should live in the spirit of yajna. That means that while, of course, we have to produce more and more beautiful things, that's what yajna does. It refines the product. In a way, corporate world does move in that direction. You know, from raw material, it makes out more and more beautiful things. And then the second aspect is to share with others. Not along the communist model where the state controls, but along the yajna model wherein the individual himself feels. So nowadays there is a term called corporate social responsibility. But we all know it ends up as an eyewash. But this is a step in the right direction wherein the corporates understand. And even within their employees, they start a new culture wherein it's not just that extreme kind of capitalism, which is of course not healthy for any society. Equally, state control as in communism is not healthy for society. So the leaders of the corporate world, they have to undergo a change. They have to understand that their own welfare, even logically, lies if the world around them advances, because otherwise who is going to, you know, buy your products if people become poorer? So this is something which corporates have to learn as far as their life is concerned. And then how these ideas will come? Well, these ideas have to be disseminated by those who are working there, by through their, you know, nowadays they come for retreats, which is a good time to gradually, you know, slip into some of these ideas of a, you know, vaster world, of a larger, and it's very good for everybody. Like, you know, protectionism is not healthy. It's not healthy even for the country. Even for the, when it was done in 30s, we know what happened. So we have to understand that we have to live in the larger spirit. We have to move towards a currency which can be easily and transactable, you know, with different countries without going through. Right now, there is a complex process of conversion. So that all this is actually begun to happen. So corporate worlds have to take a lead in that direction. So, but who is going to convince whom? That's a question which is best. I can say that mum is the word. But this is happening, and it is, the signs are very evident. As to mind, health and healing, roga to bhoga, bhoga to roga and yoga, we see actually that's how happened. See, unfortunately or fortunately, much of the world turned towards yoga because of roga. So people turned to meditation because they started having psychological breakdown. So psychology textbooks started talking of meditation, mindfulness, because people went through anxiety, depression, and now, you know, the physical yoga for curing all kinds of physical disorder. But obviously this is only a beginning. This is not actually yoga. They are celebrating International Yoga Day, but this is the way the mind of man gets hooked. Now, the moment the mind of man gets hooked, then obviously this is not going to stop. It's like you open a suddenly a wonderful doorway to a beautiful garden, and you say, you know, you just watch this little area and come back. Well, you have opened a door which is going to lead to infinity. So it's enough that the mind of man has accepted yoga. And incidentally, this acceptance, International Yoga Day on 21st June, many people may know, may not know that it is the day when the Arya was announced. So it's very interesting how the synchronicity of events is taking place. So this is how I see it. It will start with roga, but eventually once the door opens, then people will are bound to take more and more interest that what is this magic? They want to go to the source of the magic. And so the real yoga begins. Okay, so there was one more question. Role of India is that...
Actually, there will be a lot of questions. Yeah. I'd also request Avijit and Shruti would raise their hands to please put it over the comments. I'll take the next one from the comments. This is by Vani. Namaste, Alokta. The AI and gene editing to increasing lifespan. Do you see this as a consequence in the physical? How can we understand this in terms of evolution?
Yeah, so many things, you see, when a truth descends, so human mind catches it. And now when the human mind catches it, it gives it a spin because it wants to catch it in the limits of its own understanding. And that's where there would be many errors in that process of receiving the truth. See, that's how religions were formed at one point of time, because the mind caught a truth but gave it a very different form and structured in terms of the images or forms of God than what their actual forms are, certain rituals than what they really meant. So same thing is happening, because today is a world of science, not of religion. Science is catching these truths. For example, there was a movie called Cocoon, where they showed beings coming from, you know, intergalactic travel, similarly gene editing to prolong life, because this idea that life can be prolonged has entered the earth. But obviously, to have a long life and the consciousness of somebody like Mr. T or X or whatever, I need not mention, it's dangerous to the world. So obviously, it's the Hiranyakashipu syndrome that won't be allowed. But well, mankind will try. And it should try, because one day it will suddenly stumble upon the right door. It will understand that, well, I was looking for the light outside when I always carried it within. So it will try. All these are methods. It'll try gene editing to prolong life. And, you know, they have discovered, they made some fascinating discoveries, and it's okay. They can try that way. Everything is a little help in some way or the other. At least it will keep the mind of race engaged with the idea of immortality. And that's good enough. But eventually mankind will find that this is not what we need, because as we know that, you know, an immortal Ravan is a danger to the world. So the change of consciousness is the primary thing. Discovering the seeds of immortality within us, even discovering the genetic switches in terms of gene. Now we have reached that point where people are discussing that whether genes are the primary or consciousness is primary, which can alter the even genetic mechanisms, the switches. Now this thought has already started. So once this has started, we see endless scope and possibility of changing the genetic code or genetic switches, to put triggers from within by change of consciousness. This idea has come. So we'll see that happening. Women leaders, this is one of the things which is important, and the mother spoke about it directly. And I can say as a very proud Indian that I see this happening in India probably more than many parts of the world. People may not believe it while there is everything going on in the name of Women Lib, but the women leaders that India is throwing up, including Nari Shakti, which was recently displayed, including women, you know, going into fighter pilot, which is something for me, an extreme thing. So I am so happy to see, at least in India, this awakening of the women and the role they have to play as organizers, as in governance in India. There was some time back even a bill being debated about 33% women. So all this is happening in India. I feel so happy about it. And when I go out, I speak about it, that look here, you know, we are way ahead in this way. So this is what is happening. Now, yes, there will be, all these things will first take place in a larger way. It doesn't mean that, for instance, with women, that every village in India, every girl child is welcome. No, it doesn't happen like that. It is always the larger lines. It's first Maheshwari, then last is Mahasaraswati. So always the elite catch the elite. I don't mean a Brahman or a Kshatriya, but elite of mankind who are thinking ahead, who are forging ahead. They will first catch the idea, they will implement in their own little homes, and the rest will follow. That's what Shri Krishna tells Arjun, that people look up to you, and what you do, the others are going to follow. So when they see that those whom they respect, who are the elite of mankind, when they are following a way of life, then automatically we will see that the others will follow suit. So it will generalize later on. There is no doubt about it. Even in the prophecy in Savitri, generalization is the last thing to happen. But let's do our bit at in whatever level we are. So that's the role of women and role of India. I feel many things India is doing which doesn't get even publicity. And one of them is the rise of women.
Thank you, Alakta. The next question is by Vidya Priya Rao. How can India share its spiritual wisdom globally without falling into cultural appropriation or commercial exploitation? Relatedly, there is one more question I'll just put to at the same time. Dr. Smita is asking, can you please explain the role of India as the guru of all nations as put forth by the mother in Sri Aurobindo?
Yes.
So yes, see, it's like whenever you get a new toy in the market, again the same thing, a new power or a new truth is pressing upon the world, the human mind first distorts it. So I remember in All India Institute once I had given a inaugural lecture in as a guest lecture, and after that big professors, they were all saying, oh, what you said is very true, you know, there will be transformation, and they thought it's all about organ transplant. Now, this is how the human mind, so now spirituality is the new wave, because people are thirsty. So the moment people are thirsty, commercial people are bound to get in. So there will be commercialization, there would be cultural appropriation, all this is part of the process, because man is just learning to crawl toward the spiritual heights. But eventually it has to, it will fall flat. And I completely agree that commercializing spirituality is, it wasn't done. In fact, education should not be commercialized. That's why in the ashram school, the mother said, we will not charge any money. The mother and Sri Aurobindo never commercialized all their teachings. Yes, the books have a cost. Naturally, there is the printing. But otherwise, there is nothing which is commercialized. And we as her children should be the living example. So the way we can spread it is not so much by giving lectures. Well, that's okay. That's one of the things. But more important is by being living torchbearers. Wherever we go, often in the Western context, I tell my friend that, you are ambassadors of India. Your life should be such that people ask, oh, you come from the land of Buddha. But if we go there and start imitating those ways, not the best of West, there is best everywhere, but the worst, then, it's a question of our own integrity. So I feel each one of us has a responsibility here to be a living example of the truth of these teachings and the change that spirituality can bring in mankind. So this is our task. Yeah, each one. In certain ways, India has been doing it in, when it responded to problems taking place in neighborhood, regardless of the response of the country, though people said you shouldn't do it, but I feel it's a good thing. It's setting a benchmark, a kind of, you should be of course conscious, but to let people not to respond when help is required is not a good thing. So India is setting in many ways and lot of initiatives. I feel BRICS is an initiative in the right direction and expanding it to include now African countries, to include certain Western countries. So we are moving in the right direction. Yeah, the World Yagna is going on.
Thank you, Alokta. The next question is by Avijit. We think in generalities but live in details. While seeing the forest gives us bigger perspective, we still have to count the trees. Example, we still have to pay the deals, bills, deal with diseases and conflicts, even though we know in the end it doesn't matter. How do we balance these two? What would Sri Aurobindo say on it?
Everything matters. We must pay the dues. So spiritual life should not be cut off from the present realities of the world. So we pay the dues and we do everything, but the spirit will be different. I can only give you, not by way of giving my example, but something through which I lived throughout my Air Force career, 20 years, 21 years. I didn't know what my pay is because, you know, the pay used to go to the bank. I used to get a pay slip. I would fold it, keep it before, you know, earlier in a kind of file because I was told you are supposed to keep it. And then later on, you know, before Mother and Sri Aurobindo, before filing it. So after some time, somebody said that, do you know that how much of income tax is being cut? So I said, no. He said, no, you can save income tax. You can do this or that. I said, look here, this tax is going to Mother India. She's also my mother. So it's okay. So maybe I am being taxed a little more, but that's fine. After all, this is going to a good use. Then the people said that, well, how do you know the politicians are going to use it well? I said, well, I cannot ensure that. But from my side, still, I have put my ahuti in the yajna. So I think it's a question of change of attitude. Of course, one has to go for earning. One has to live, you know, look after the family. All this is there, part of the play. But there is a difference between making these as the center of life and keeping them as one of those aspects in life. Like earning is important. It's part of life. You know, you need money to look after your need. But to earn money to satisfy greeds, to have a holiday abroad and to buy shop on Amazon, well, that's going, you know, that's the line is subtle, thin by, between need and desire. But as Indians, we can show that example. So yes, details, realities, everything is there. But at the same time, I must tell you one thing, which is again my own experience and the experience of some people I know, that if you really sincerely walk on the path of yoga, at least integral yoga, I can vouchsafe. Yogshem Vahamyam is very true. The divine looks after you. But you have to be sincere that your focus is towards the goal and the divine will take care of all that you need and much more than you need. So this is the other side of the story. But initially, it is a leap of faith. Because you won't get a written contract from the divine. I mean, Sri Krishna said in so many words, Yogshem Vahamyam. But nevertheless, I have seen amazing stories of most impossible situations and the divine taking care. Because after all, he is the super conscious being. We are not even half conscious beings. So when we connect with him, he sees so much in advance and does things. Okay, J. Krishnamurti, what does he mention? I have read some of his books.
Shall I read it?
Yeah, but you can also flash it on the, yeah.
I don't know how to flash it.
Okay, fine. So, yeah, please.
Namaste, Alokta. I was reading Jay Krishnamurti's book, What Are You Looking For? Where he mentions that the only way to unite humanity globally is not by pushing ideas or preaching unity, but through spiritual realization of each individual. Only when each person goes through their own realization and sees through the falseness of the self-centered ego and the futile actions arising from it can true unity emerge. How do you think we can invoke that kind of spiritual realization in each individual? On my part, whenever I try to nudge people in my immediate friend circle or family, I face immense resistance.
Yes, so, but that's very true, that the true basis of unity has to be the one self in all. So, of course, Sri Aurobindo's yoga takes into account many other things like change of consciousness, transformation of instrument. But the basis of human unity has to be the real ground of the one self in all. So there is no doubt about it. And absolutely, this is right on target. And as long as we live in ego and preach human unity, it will be like a pig wearing a crown of gold. So we shouldn't do that. It's better to be gold. So, yeah, Sri Aurobindo has said precisely the same thing that, you know, basically we should live in the one self. It's there in the life, in the Isha Upanishad also. So there is no doubt that we should rise to those heights. It's no point in, as the mother said, you know, world union was formed with the idea of preaching world unity, and the mother laughed and said, there are three of them and they can't even, they are quarreling within themselves and they want to preach unity to the world. So definitely the first thing is spiritual realization. That's what we started with, that, you know, is the individual who becomes the leader. Yeah, fate of Hindus in Bangladesh, government doing nothing. Don't you see that the Hindus as a result are learning to stand on the two legs? So this is also when the divine seems to walk by. It's not about Indian government or that government. Sometimes he wakens a nation and the lost glory of a nation by shaking it up. It's like Sri Krishna didn't do magic to overthrow Kansa. There had to be a process. So this is a process that is going on in Bangladesh. Partly a catharsis of many of those elements which were always there. They never went away. So those elements are asserting. Then of course, there are those who remained. They have to now realign themselves, redefine their role, and surely the divine is looking into it. I don't think India should directly meddle into it, because it has many repercussions. Because imagine if today India meddles in Bangladesh, because, you know, we are Hindus, they are Hindus. Tomorrow, precisely Qatar did that the Muslim countries start meddling into Indian affairs, that, well, you know, some Muslim somewhere, he was lynched, therefore we are going to enter. No, we should not do that, because nations have their sovereignty. And while, yes, we can be generous to those who cross the border, who are Hindus, who have been persecuted, that's what CAA was meant for, but there should not be a direct intervention unless people there reach a point where things are like what happened in the Bangladesh. But we should be very careful and cautious, because we'll open a very Pandora's box. Tomorrow Christians will ask for intervention of the Western world. So we have to understand that in real policies, foreign policy doesn't work like that. It will also create other issues. For example, Muslims having a problem somewhere. So Muslims in India may say, why don't you intervene? We should do it with great care and caution.
Alokda, the question was this, sorry, there was some miss here, if this time. The question was this, how do you continue to learn today? What's the process that you follow as of today? And how would you suggest going about doing that in the modern context with AI? I mean, would you still rely deeply on intuition, or would you take some, relevance of AI that's coming through?
Okay,
and
so...
The mother as well, Alokda, I just want to learn that. We talk about Sri Aurobindo's dream. Are they all one, or there's more from the mother?
Okay, so, well, first thing, I am very, very fortunate that I read the entire works of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, plus Nalini Das and all other works before AI came. In fact, before the age of internet, because I was a fire. And till date, if you ask me, there is nothing like reading from a book. So if you ask me, AI is okay for a quick search engine, but it's very, very, very fallacious. And the reason I say so is there are many places where, you know, Sri Aurobindo speaks all about supermind without using the word supermind. In prayers and meditation, mother speaks about man being at the junction of the X, where, you know, from the higher world and to the lower he has to. So we have to get at the ideas, not at the words and the thoughts. AI is pretty foolish, you know, it's really a bot. So I'm not much fond of it. Yes, sometimes I use it, because if I know where the quote is, but the exact page number and detail in a quick thing, but more or less I remember, that's Mother's Grace, that which volume this is there. So for example, now I know this is an autobiographical note, that Sri Aurobindo's Independence Day message is there, message to America, so many of, so roughly you should know, and then you can go. And it's a very good thing, because it helps your memory, it helps your mind to evolve, because it's not just about finding something, but also about learning is also a growth. So when we engage with Sri Aurobindo's books directly, when we take some effort to understand, to search, to find, all this adds to the larger evolution. So for me, that's what is, And as to mother, yes, mother spoke about, as I said, splitting of Pakistan in five parts. She spoke about, conversion of America, which is one of the things she wants. So you see, America has been with the adverse forces. She says that. And then change of the whole UNO structure, which is happening now. She was totally against these five countries doing a veto. She spoke about a larger Asian confederation. She has spoken many things. That's a big subject. I have written on this, and probably I have taken out an issue of All India Magazine, or I will be taking out one. So, collecting all that. It's fascinating. Okay, so shall we call it a day? Yeah?
Yes, if you have any closing remarks, and then I think we can close.
So from my side, the only closing remark is the opening remark. Love the mother and know that the mother loves you. Nothing else is required. All else will grow and develop. Have faith, have patience. And all that seems impossible, far, will come near and grow intimate. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you so much. Yes,
yes,
yes. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
India's independence. Thank you.
One small request before I sign out. I'll be grateful if the questions can be just sent to me. So, when I give this talk for publishing, those questions can be added. Okay?
Yes, yes, we'll do that. Pooja, you can copy and keep. Yes, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you.